I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 529. For everything they got wrong, they got a lot right. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming to gadget anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm alive still.
Hey, you know what? You gotta take a win where you get it.
We're almost there.
You gotta keep putting up them W's.
Oh. Taking no L's.
You're taking no L's this week. Okay. If you don't take an L, you don't got to bounce back.
That's right.
Okay. You're putting up none but W's. Big numbers here. That's what we're doing. That's what we're about. That's how we live in the land of Esh. Thank you guys so much for joining us for another episode of our podcast. We have a couple of things that we want to talk about this week. Guess what? I'm going to be talking about Mass Effect Andromeda. Told you it was coming. It's going to be right here. So I'm going to jump in first because I really want to dive into...
Yours is going to be really long.
Yeah, mine's going to be long. I'm going to somewhat apologize for it, but also not.
You're the oldest. It's fine. Next weekend, it's about me. So the least I can do is give you this show.
Right? I don't ask for a lot. I'm just asking for their podcast.
But right
episode.
Now.
I'm just asking.
I ranted last week. And took us on a detour to Tangent Town. So at least
we hadn't been to Tangent Town in a while, so it was probably like we were overdue.
It was overdue. So go ahead.
All right.
Now that you've had your foot and like your whole body in the Andromeda pool.
I jumped in real hard. So
tell us about it.
Absolutely.
Tell us about it.
So last week I had spent some time talking to you guys about my early access experience running through Mass Effect Andromeda on the EA Access trial that they had available. I've been playing the game since it came out on the 21st on my Xbox One, and I want to talk to you guys about that experience because there have been a lot of people talking about Mass Effect Andromeda. Very much I feel like the community as a whole has been... the digital entertainment community, I should say, has been very, very critical of different types of content that's come out this week, you know.
I mean, I think everybody and their mom would be talking about Andromeda.
They've been talking about Andromeda, and they've been talking about Iron Fist on Netflix.
Oh, God, I can't roll my eyes hard enough.
Right. And I feel like Andromeda's in a similar space. So, you know, I mentioned that, you know, at the core of my experience playing Andromeda during the trial, I definitely saw some of the animation stuff that people were talking about negatively about the game. But for me, honestly, you know, I kind of tacked it up to, I know that I personally have been very spoiled by games on the current gen systems being so pristine when it comes to rendering people. You know, you look at the kind of stuff that Quantic Dream puts out and you look at, you know, even the last Witcher game, for crying out loud, the animations on people moving and talking and whatnot, you know, you become very spoiled to this is the expectation for deliverable. And so when something doesn't hit that mark or better, it does stand out like a sore thumb. And for me, that's what some of the facial animations on conversations held by human characters in the game look like. But once you get past that and you kind of turn that off, the game is still Mass Effect at its core. And so if you enjoy gallivanting around the universe, fighting some stuff, exploring worlds, you know, open big ass sandboxes, then you're going to enjoy Mass Effect. That's what I really thought. So now that I've been playing the game for a week, I want to share my thoughts, my findings, and frankly, my what the fuck is up with you gamers opinion.
I feel like this could potentially turn into a segment because of just how jaded our community is about what they expect in games. Like, I think this could just be totally a segment now.
Well, it's you keep like, expecting fuck, better and more, and you keep expecting better and more. And, you know, a lot of times...
People plateau, you know. Like, sometimes you just gotta... You stay at a place for a bit until you get that innovation, and then boom, you're up to the next level. But it's not constant progression. It's hard progression.
To create constant innovation, right? It's hard to reinvent something over and over and over again. Sometimes, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. There's a reason why I say that, because sometimes, you know, more of the same is just what you need. Okay, when it comes to BioWare games, that's kind of where I live. I'm looking for more of the same. You know, Mass Effect 2 and 3 were phenomenal games, and having Andromeda continue in that line would have been 100% okay with me. Not necessarily that I needed Shepard, because in all honesty, I kind of like the Ryder character that I'm playing right now in Andromeda, because they are a completely new point to create a story in the Mass Effect realm. That isn't Shepard. You know, there's only so many things you can do with Shepard. But Andromeda takes place in the Mass Effect timeline between games 2 and 3, which is why it is somewhat devoid of Shepard, and why it makes sense that it's devoid of Shepard. So humanity, along with the other known alien, advanced alien races in the galaxy, the Asari, the Salarians, the Krogan, and the Turian, are all looking for expansion to create new homes for their people in the Andromeda Galaxy. A bunch of research was done, and it was determined that Andromeda had the bountiful amount of planets that could sustain life on them, that would be the goal. And so each of these species created an ark, kind of like Noah's Ark, where they put a bunch of their people into stasis, cryostasis, because the journey was going to take, you know, about 600 years to get from the Milky Way galaxy to the Andromeda galaxy. And so the hope was that each of these arcs would arrive around the same time, and that they would start to build habitats and...
Habitat for humanities!
For all of these different races. So, you know, as far as the story goes, being on the look for the new home in the galaxy, not a bad story. Each of the arcs had a commander, a super commander, if you will, called the Pathfinder. And the Pathfinder was supposed to find the path that the arc would take
to get to the
planet that they were going to inhabit. Well, some...
shit happened?
And arcs are missing.
Oh. So there's a chunk of people floating around in stasis, and not where they're supposed to be.
Right. And nobody knows where they are and what has happened. When they actually reach the Andromeda Galaxy, there's this infestation called the Scourge. And the Scourge does damage to ships, to people, and it's not really understood. It's just something right now that is avoided at all costs. There are also enemies called the Ket, and you discover in your training levels, because we're not sure if they're friend or foe. They're definitely foe. It takes us a little while to learn their language. You actually have to inspect these different spires on different planets within the galaxy to find decryption glyphs that your AI, Sam, uses to basically translate the language. So he becomes the babblefish. So that as you get further and further into the game, you start discovering audio logs that you can actually interpret and understand what it is that they're saying. And the Ket, way worse than the Reapers. Way worse.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. They
were pretty bad.
The Ket see all of the species that they have run across with so far as lesser beings. And therefore, in learning how they tick, set up various bases to pull them apart and autopsy them and figure out like what makes them tick and if they can be useful.
Oh, they're the Siler from Heroes.
Yeah.
Of the galaxy.
Yeah. That's basically what they are.
Oh, Siler sucked.
Yeah.
He was so bad.
The Ket suck. Through a mishap on the first planet, Eos, that you drop onto, your dad, Alex Ryder, who was the Pathfinder for the human arc, ends up dead. saving your dumbass and makes you the Pathfinder. Which pisses off his second-in-command, Cora, who is this...
quite a bit.
...badass chick, you know, with the prerequisite badass chick design. So she's got the asymmetric haircut.
So she's going on, like the Jack?
Well, Jack had no hair.
Right, but she was badass, though.
Yeah, she's badass. She's not as angry as Jack.
Jack has a lot of reasons to be
Jack angry. Had a lot of reasons to be pissed. But Cora is very much like Jack because Cora is a biotic. Okay. She was actually an Asari commando for a while, even though Cora is human.
Okay.
So she was part of an exchange program because her biotics were so fucking unbelievable.
Off the hizzy?
Yeah. So she was a huntress for the Asari for quite some time, which is their elite guard.
You have to know two passwords to get in.
Yeah, you do. And a handshake. And also how to rip somebody apart with a Nova Bomb. You do those things, and yeah. So Cora's real OP if you build her up. Cora is also enamored and grateful to Alex Rider for putting her on a path. But there is definitely some jealousy, and just Cora phrases it as not understanding why, when everything went down, Alec chose to make you, his child, the Pathfinder versus... Cora. So there's that line running between you.
There's that tension, plot line.
But you can get around it and bang her. So you just gotta pick the right... Yeah,
sometimes
she's bangable.
Rage fucking is just as good as love fucking. You know what I'm saying?
She's bangable. Talk to her about her plants.
I heard there's an achievement for banging like three people in your crew.
Right, because you can bang...
Everybody.
Not everybody. Okay.
Oh, do they make somebody unbangable again, in three?
Well, yes, but the unbangable person is the doctor, the Asari doctor. She won't sleep with you, no matter what sex you pick. But the reason why she won't bang you...
Is it very much like the other Asari from the other game?
Nope. That's not what it is. The main reason that she won't bang you, if you're paying attention, is because she actually has feelings for a doctor back on the Nexus base. So the original doctor who is in your party, after the training missions, decides to stay on the Nexus, which is basically home base. It's kind of like Deep Space Nine. It's the human base out on the outskirts of Andromeda where all ships are launched for. And basically, it wants to be the citadel of Andromeda.
Okay.
He decides he's getting too old for this shit and stays on the Nexus.
It happens to all of us. Eventually, we all get too old for the shit.
Right. Stays on the Nexus. But he was kind of sort of Dr. Lexi's, the Ansari doctor that ends up on your ship, her mentor. And if you pay attention to her logs and talk to her a lot, the way that she talks about him is definitely less about mentor and more about, I want to jump that, but I'm not confident enough to do it. Like, he sends her misses all the time, just reassuring her that she's strong enough to do this, she's ready to do this. And, you know, even though he's
like, I want to be strong enough to take off your pants.
And even though he's an old man, you know, for a human and young by her standards, and doesn't have to take advice from him. He really should, because there are some things he's learned. So, like, he's constantly sending her, you can do it, I believe in you messages. And she's just all like, So, that's the main reason she won't bang you, is because she's actually in love with somebody else. So, it makes sense.
Okay.
That's a good reason to not bang me. Right, because you're already in love with somebody else. Whereas, on Mass Effect 3, the only reason why you couldn't bang Freddie Prinze Jr. is because Freddie Prinze Jr. is like, I'm not reading that dialogue, so no, my character's not bangable.
It's like,
I'm... Empire was like, okay, we respect that. I will say that the bangage that is available...
I heard it was like softcore space porn.
It is, in fact, softcore space porn.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So, you know, because really we get to the nut and bolts of things here on this podcast. Cora is bangable, whether you're a male or a female.
It's all about power.
There is an Asari chick that ends up on your crew called PB that you can
recruit. PB! Like PB&J!
And PB is eccentric and all about the experience and not necessarily like putting up roots or monogamy or anything like that. PB is bangable no matter what sex you are. Your engineer is bangable if you are a dude. I found that out because I, like, tried to run my game on him. He's like, are you hitting on me? And your character, because my character is female, so I'm a female writer. I was like, yeah, but evidently not very effectively. And he's like, no, it's not that. It's just that I'm not into women. And you're like, oh, sweet, cool.
I could, like, go get an attachment right quick.
I mean,
like, we are in the space era. I'm sure there are things I can do.
I mean, I'm sure there's technology, but
like, whatever. Close your eyes and turn around.
He's only okay cute anyway, but he likes to play poker, so I'm sure that he would be, like, fun to bang. So I may go back and at some point do a run through.
Bangity bang. I said bang, bang, bangity bang.
Bang, bang, bang. So I might do a male run through. But it is softcore porn. There's a new race that we're introduced to called the Andara. Their posture is really interesting. It's very much like Jamaicans and Australians had a baby as far as the accent.
Oh my God, what?
Yeah, it's a damn sexy accent that all the Andara have. And their planet, Aya, is very much almost like an island planet. It's very, very green and beautiful. They're very much about their culture, and they are a super emotional race. So they are led by their emotions. They're kind of the reverse of the, what was Tali?
They had the masks because they couldn't breathe.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember what their race was called, but the Andara are
the awesome race.
The Andara were the opposite of that. So where that race was very reserved, tried not to put their emotions out there too much, the Andara are the opposite. They've been fighting the Ket forever. The Ket are constantly kidnapping their people, but they're like, whatever, we're just going to be badass and fight them. But their posture is very much, it's kind of like the way the characters were designed. It was if Cat and a Snuffleupagus and a Anubis had a baby.
All three of them together.
Yeah, the three of them together.
In a genetic blender.
Had a baby that was purple. You would have the Andara. You know, they very much walk like an upright cat. Super big thighs and legs. Super big upper bodies. But they curve a little bit. So it kind of always looks like they're kowtowing. Okay. Like they're a little scared. But they're actually not. Because they're primarily scientists and warriors. And so Jahl ends up joining our crew. Jahl is bangable if you're a chick. And he will bang you on Aya. And there's a lot of body partage that you see. There's a lot of body partage that you see if you bang Korra. So, like, before the bangage in Mass Effect, like, it alluded to, and you got, like, you know, an underboob here, and, like, a curvature of a back, and, like, the start of a butt, and maybe, like, the start of a butt
That's
crack
right
here.
Way to do it.
Like, that was Mass Effect 3 sex. Andromeda sex is straight up humping and pumping.
Push it to the limit.
Yeah, they really do. Korra gets some reverse cowgirl action going on. So does PB. And then she has like a space mind meld fuck thing that happens. I haven't banged everybody yet.
Well, you got time.
I did two missions and immediately started flirting with Jahl. And I was like, damn, I'm about to be able to get this like real quick. I haven't even got like 20% into the game yet. And I'm about to be able to bang.
Hey, you know what?
Nice.
For some, banging is just,
I mean,
know.
I have been on stasis, in stasis for like 600 years, so.
I mean, like, you got, like, the urge.
There
the
are itches is, you gotta scratch. And that like 600-year one is like a, it's a long one.
It's like, let me just bang this out right quick, and then I can focus.
the Turian that we have on board is named Vetra, so we have a Turian chick.
Ooh.
Cool. And she's badass. Immediately reminded me of Garrus, though. Who I sexed in Mass Effect 3.
Oh, Garrus.
I know. I fucking love Garrus.
He's always calibrating.
He's always calibrating. Oh. Anyway. Vetra is head of security, so and she's biotic, which is cool. We have a human dude with dreads. I forget his name now because he's mad forgettable. I think it begins with an I. Let's go with that. I'll call him Ivan. Iridium. I don't know. He's got a real junky ass fucking couch. He's trying to be like morale for people on the ship and stuff, which is cool.
Like, believe. Oh, see, and don't get me wrong. I think you need to have somebody who definitely boosts the morale, especially when stuff gets low. But it's one of those tropes that, well, one, it's a dude, right? I did hear you right, that it's like a dude.
He's a dude.
I'm glad, glad to see that they're gender swapping, because usually it's like a girl with big wet eyes who's like, revolutions are built on hope. And then you all die. Spoilers.
No, he's just like, you know, like, the crew just needs to, like, lighten up, and I'm here because I was looking for an adventure, and, you know, one of the things I think that'll help, like, all these tensions going on is a movie night, so I need you to get me some movies because I'm going to start that up, and, like, we'll just come and hang out on the couch, and, like, dude, it's a ratty-ass couch. Like, nobody's going to sit on this couch. You can bang him. You end up banging him on the grody-ass couch, though. Beware of that, because that's how you get space herpes. And there is a Krogan. There's a Krogan.
It's a Lady Krogan?
Nope, Dude Krogan.
Okay. That's all right.
Yep, Dude Krogan. His name begins with a D. Drac. Drac calls you kid all the time and regales you with war stories and things like that. Great, great tank to take in for, like, missions that are going to be really difficult, so I do recommend...
I mean, does he call you kid because of... Because
he's so old and you're young.
Okay.
Well,
I mean, you've been in stasis for 600 years, so really you're not that young.
But what's really funny is, well, not funny, but a nice way to tie it all together, Drac's granddaughter is the Krogan that is part of the Nexus and is on that ship. And so whenever you go back to the Nexus, he always goes to her room and is, like, giving her shit so you can listen in on their stories. And he'll be like, well, why haven't you done this and why haven't you done that? And she's like, why haven't you died yet? You know, like Krogans do. So the dialogue is really, really fun. And there's a lot of dialogue to listen to. Like, every place you go, people are constantly having conversations, whether you can interact with them or not. So you're constantly being fed more deeper pieces of the story, which to me is very interesting. And the most interesting part of a Mass Effect game is the story, the journey that you are on, why you go to all these different planets to... take your vehicle now and mine for elements. So you're still mining for elements on planets. You're just not probing them from the areas of space. You're doing it while you're running around on basically your rover, which is called your Nomad, to find these elements because you need these elements to craft items. You can craft everything from armor to weapons if you have the right blueprints and the right elements. And there are different elements on different planets. As you explore the planets, you can create what are called forward stations, which are basically fast travel and healing points. So these little things drop and they kind of look like returning space shuttle capsules. Once you find them on the map, they'll drop into an area that then becomes an area that you can fast travel to across the planet, which is really helpful when you're running multiple missions to be able to fast travel, because otherwise you do, in fact, have to fucking drive everywhere. And the planets are big, so it can take a while. Like, before I had realized what forward stations let me do as far as fast travel, because reading the map is atrocious. Whenever you come out to the map view, nobody thought of, hey, let's make sure to add contrast to the HUD on this map so people can actually, like, read this text. Let's not put light blue text on a dark blue background. Oh. Let's not do that. So, like, more times than not, I have to, like, when I bring up the map, go to an area that I haven't discovered yet, so it's still all black, so I can actually read the fucking legend and read the description of the missions to figure out where I need to go. So it's just poor UI on that, because everything on the map is white, blue, orange, and black.
Like, it sounds like, generally, everything seems to be engaging enough, and nothing seems to be really deal-breaker-y for you, unless you haven't talked about it yet.
It's not deal-breaker. There's no deal-breaker yet for me in Mass Effect Andromeda. Okay? Once you get past the training episodes, which is really the prologue, and you start getting into going to different planets, recruiting different people to your missions, finding different resources and different weapons and different armor, and figuring out, as you start earning skill points to configure your character to excel in the ways that you want to play the game, it is straight up more Mass Effect and crazy enjoyable, okay? There are random battles that pop up as you're exploring the terrain on different planets. There are stories and side missions that you can run outside of your critical path, and there are plenty of them. As you're discovering these planets are not instantly viable. Okay, you have to explore them and get their resources and do different things to make them viable so that you can create an outpost and start bringing people to that planet. And that planet can then start producing things that you need. So, for instance, when you first drop on Eos, the whole thing's covered by radiation. There are different levels of radiation. You can pretty much be okay in level 1 radiation areas, but in 2 and 3, it will eat away at your life support. So you need to, you know, manage how much time you spend outside of your rover. As you go along the planet, finding those drop stations, getting the atmosphere converter that was left behind by some other race that the Ket seem really interested in, and we're really interested in, because once you kick their environmental machine up and running, it completely changes the environment of the planet, so it's hospitable. You basically have to take a planet from 0% viability to, if you want to be able to 100% the game, 100% viability, so that you can get, I think once you get to like 50% viability or better, you can request an outpost. And that's when the Nexus will wake up more people from stasis and send them to your planet. Once they get to your planet, you have to decide, okay, what's this planet's focus going to be? Are they going to be research and development? Are they going to be consumer-based? Are they going to be a militia base? Because you need to make sure that you're building up your resources well. So that's when it turns into a sim game. You know, because okay. I initially made Eos a scientific research community. My next community that I built up, I made them a military community. So they're going to be working on churning out more soldiers, weapons, defenses, technology. The next community that I whip up on the next planet I go to, they're going to be consumer-based so that I can get better deals on goods and services, and there'll be more goods and services out in the world. So you have to figure out the resources that you're going to need to manage. So you have that as a whole layer that's going on in the game. Then you have these strike missions that you can send people out. So kind of like assassin missions.
Oh, they go out, and if whether they succeed or fail, like right. they level up and stuff.
Right, and they bring back stuff for you. The strike missions, you can send out automated, your team, and they're typically like made up of Turians and Asari. But you can send out the team, and you can send, I think, them like once a day or whatever, and they come back, and, you know, whether or not they were successful or not, you get money, they rank up or whatever. Or you can be a member of that strike team, and that's where the multiplayer comes in through the single player. The strike teams are the multiplayer angle. So you can be like, actually, no, I'm going to be part of this group and do this strike mission. And so there are different ways that those work. And so there's a whole nother level of the game, you know, that isn't the critical path. And you can build up, you know, specialty characters and weapons by doing the strike team missions, the apex missions. You can earn different things to bring back to your ship and consumables. So, like, there's this whole third other layer that's outside of there. So the game is super rich and super deep. And I think that that's part of the reason why some things aren't as polished as what we have come to expect from BioWare in a game, because it is so fucking rich. And you could just spend time doing nothing but the multiplayer stuff. You can do nothing but strike missions, and they just keep coming, and they just keep coming. And, you know, it's a way for you to spin up these random characters. You can play as a Krogan in these different levels and take out various Ket and other things. There are escort missions. There's, you know, find this resource, take out this specific person mission. And this is all multiplayer, which you can do over mic or not, which is super cool. So you have, you know, bringing planet viability up and running. Because you can leave a planet and never bring it to 100% viability, but that leaves a whole lot of story and a whole lot of resources out there that you're not tapping. So it's a delicate balance of critical path story, side quests to bring up viability for a planet. Like, the second planet that you bring up to viability is a snow-covered planet. And I thought, oh, well, I'm going to bring, you know, lush planet-side life to this planet. Nope. I'm going to just bring more people. I'm going to change the atmosphere so it's breathable. But I'm going to keep it a nice planet, because this is going to be a planet that we mine to bring water to other planets that don't have it, like Eos, which is a desert planet. So, you know, setting those guys up to be militia is great, because that means all the mining ships that are going to leave this planet now are going to be guarded, so they're probably not going to get jacked as much when they're making their routes to other planets to deliver ice and water. You know, so it's very, very fucking deep on how you have to think of using your resources, what you're going to have available. As you set up these different resources, you're able to open up perks, and those perks come in the form of science, militia, combat, and commerce. And those are boosts and perks for you and your ship. So, like, the first one I turned on was a commerce one so that I would get better deals at any merchants that I went to. And so, basically, it gives me a 10% discount, which is big when you're first setting out because you're constantly going to need to buy things that you're not going to be able to find easy. You know, some of the better armor that I found blueprints for require elements that are on planets I haven't even gotten to yet, but I can buy them from merchants. So I
yeah, but you're going to pay out the butt for it.
Right, so that's where the 10% discount helps. And so knowing
Not a lot, though.
Right, not a lot, but hey, it covers the taxes.
Every little bit counts.
You know, and that allowed me to get some better armor right off the bat, so I was able to run faster. And it also gave me a discount on upgrades for my nomad, because your nomad's completely upgradable, just like your weapons are tweakable. You can get blueprints and you can go to a research center and use your minerals and assets to craft a piece of armor similar to one that you already have, but that has mod slots on it. So you can modify it to boost its overall effect on your health, its effect on you using shotguns, whether that's damage or penetration, that's up to you. So, like, the crafting that is in the game is also a huge deep level. And you could just spend time, like, crafting several Pathfinder helmets, you know, for different situations. This is my Pathfinder helmet for when I'm going into battle. This is my Pathfinder helmet for when I'm exploring the fucking planet and I want to get more experience points so I can bring up its viability fast. I spent 3 hours, finally, I was able to get Eos, the first planet that I settled, up to 100% viability, and that was after traipsing across the whole thing and finding all of, and activating all of the forward stations, then finding all of the areas that the remnant glyphs were at, and the remnant are the people that have left the way, way far ahead technology. They're kind of the Protheans.
Okay. I was about to say, I'm like, sounds like
the Protheans. So where the Ket were the Reavers of the previous game, the Remnant are the Protheans. So there's all this future tech. Nobody knows who left it behind or why.
Like, here, have this, follow our trail,
Seems to allow for these planets that were probably not viable to become viable. So everyone's like, well, who the fuck were the Remnant? And why are they leaving all this stuff behind? And why can this, like, terraform a whole planet in, like, 13 minutes?
Ow.
Yeah, so that. So the game is super deep. If you like that kind of game, there really isn't anything wrong with Mass Effect Andromeda.
So then the firefights are fast. What are people bitching about?
I think the main thing that they're bitching about is that it doesn't feel as polished as they expected the game would feel when with a game that's been on a 5-year dev cycle. Because I think that's the other side of it, right? Like, we've known about Andromeda for a long time. People begged for another Mass Effect game the moment they finished their first playthrough of 3. Without finishing the other two run-throughs, people were already like, Mass Effect 4, when is it happening? Because we need more of this in our lives. And Byron was like,
So they had the other two endings in their life. We want most of 3, except for the last 15 minutes. Give us more 3, but change the last 15 minutes of the game.
Right. And even though you gave us the middle of the road ending that we bitched at you for, still, the last 15 minutes, not what we wanted. So take that out, but make that game again. BioWare already had been working on, you know, other games.
Because, you know, they're not just about
Mass Effect.
There's still another Dragon Age that we're waiting for, so where's that one?
Right, and I think that's the deal, is that, you know, they started working on Andromeda, and they were working on their Dragon Age game, because let's face it, we all know that BioWare's working on a Dragon Age game, because that's where they make the money.
That's because I need more. Like, it's nice to be able to bang aliens in space, like, you know.
And by the way, the banging is still, it is softcore porn. I can't stress this enough, especially for any parents that are listening to this podcast. This game is not for your children.
Don't let them play it. They will get weird expectations about life.
Damn near everybody I talk to swears in one way or another, except for the doctors.
And they do swear just on breaks.
I'm sure that there will be a mission where, you know, everything goes to shit and they start dropping fuck bombs too, but a lot of the characters talk about shit and fuck this and fuck that, and which is fine. Fuck is my favorite word. It's my favorite word. And when, you know, you're expecting to go to a planet and it be ready for you when you get there after being asleep for 600 years, and it's not.
And then you find out it's not.
And then three different arcs of aliens are missing and nobody knows where the fuck they are. People are running out of food, running out of hope. Like, fuck is a word that you would use. Like, a lot. I get that. But between the language of the characters, really, because of the depth of the game, you have to have keen attention to detail and also a want to get through all the detail that is being thrown at you to enjoy the game, because it's more exploring than battling, which has always been a balance in Mass Effect.
Maybe Mass Effect Andromeda was what No Man's Sky was supposed to feel like, minus the banging.
Right, because there's no banging in No Man's Sky. There's banging.
Oh, no, space is banging you. You just don't like it.
I feel like for the people that are hating on this game, the main reason that it's happened is that there's been too much time between 3 and Andromeda. If you had played Andromeda 2 years after you finished 3, I don't think that you would be seeing this hate.
All the backlash.
Right. I really don't think that. I think that people are just so far removed from Mass Effect, playing Mass Effect, that they have forgotten
Mass Effect.
Mass Effect. Really. I feel like they have remembered their cutscenes, and they're remembering the cutscenes as if it was gameplay.
Maybe.
Which it wasn't. Sense. Because the renders in the game are awesome. The FMV looks great. But when characters are talking to each other and you're going through your dialogue trees and picking your dialogue,
that's a little shoddy.
The animations on that are a little choppy. Okay, it's like no one went back over them and did like a final pass through of like, let's tighten that up a little bit.
Ah, I see.
So I feel like the final render cleanup thing didn't happen. Because they're like, oh shit, we're already a year and a half late with this game. We gotta get it out.
I mean, I think any game that has a long cycle, I think we as a consumer do have this expectation of these dev houses. Like, okay, you're going to make me wait 10 years. Well, then this better be plated in gold. It better have wings. It better like...
Else I'm not paying $60 for it.
It better come with like the best poutine from Canada. Like we do have like these high expectations for something that takes so long to produce. Right. But, like when you get a game that does not meet that, I mean, I definitely understand people's frustration and their anger because we have waited. But I mean, at the same time, like, you know, these are people who, yeah, it's their job, but like they have spent all this time. So I mean, yes, it may, you know, and I don't think we really should have so much power over, you know, what is good and what is not good. We are not doing this coding. We are not doing the scripting. We're not doing... Like, there's
the
so much
work,
more going.
The ADR work. We're like, not doing the
there's
QA.
All this,
we're not.
Right. Like, but here we are, like, our opinions matter if you want our money. Which, okay, yes, they kind of sort of do. But I think we forget, or we look at the business as a business, and we don't realize that these are people's backs. These are people's time. This is people away from parts of their families, which is, this
for
is the reason why.
Years.
You know, chunks of time, you know, some of these people, you know, don't get to meet their babies when their babies are born because
right.
of all the, like,
they get
there's
to meet
so
their
much
after the game is launched.
Right. And that's why they get the little thank you for all the babies. It's like, no. Like, that still doesn't even amount to everything that these people to do this job sacrifice for our entertainment.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying, you know, don't put the effort into your work. Like, clearly do that, because one, you're getting paid to do that. It is your given skill set to do that. And, you know, and if you do enjoy entertainment, like providing entertainment and doing this, then yes, your passion should be in your work. But at the same time, we should still be appreciating, you know, these people are draining their lives to give us dramatic effect, to
right.
give us great, you know, graphics, to give us great sound design,
right.
to do all this stuff. And here we are like, let me take out my gamer, my gamer critic dick and just piss all over your work like it was nothing. And I feel like we're very quick to say the meanest thing without acknowledging everything else that went into delivering the content.
Right. You know, one of the things that I didn't like about 3 is, like, when you traveled, you know, from galaxy to galaxy, there wasn't, like, you know, a cool animation. It was just the same, like, animation all the time. When you travel from planet to planet, and when you travel just in space in the Tempest to begin with, you always start from the planet that you're on, and the camera backs out like you're going super in reverse real quickly, and then pans to where you're going to go. And you start traveling through light, and there's a swirl of cloud around you, and then you obviously go into hyper warp. You animate into the galaxy, and then there's a moment where it pauses. Obviously, that's where it's actually loading all the things that are going to be on the planets, their textures and whatnot. Then you actually descend towards the planet that you're going to go to, and so you can see the solar system, and then you actually pick the planet, and you motion into the planet. So, like, you feel like you're actually traversing space in these steps. You know, that took a lot of time and effort, because you know the team tried to map Andromeda star for star in the game. So it's not like it's just randomly generated. You know, and to your point, there's a lot of time and effort that went into this game. This game is super fucking deep if you want it to be. It can be superficial if you want it to be. You can just critical path the story piece. You can go in and you can select the narrative mode, which basically makes you fire like 2 bullets to kill people for the force kill stuff that you have to do. And just go through basically all of the dialogue and the story. You can do that. And you can do that quickly. Or you can go for a harder difficulty and also add all the exploration onto it, all of the crafting onto it, all of the side missions onto it, all of the mini games, because there are mini games that you have to solve, you know, puzzle problems in order to get glyphs, in order to get more of the story and understand who the cat are and actually what the fuck they want to do. You can go through the whole relationship arcs if you want to, because you have levels of baggage and then doing something serious. So you can flirt with everybody up to a point and then go after who you want to bang and have a thing with or not have a thing with. Or you can avoid that completely. You can go through all the politics stuff. And you can play the politics game and spend more time on the Nexus and taking up missions there. I had to solve a murder. Like, there are so many different levels to this game that it really is a massive choose-your-own-adventure. And that excites me. So I don't have a deal-breaker with Mass Effect Andromeda, which both you and I thought after we saw the first trailer where they started going
We were prepared for problems.
I was really sat down.
We're like, look, we might come into some crap. Let's be ready for it. Like,
well, I mean, when we finished talking on that podcast, I was like, yo, I was a lock for Andromeda before, and now I don't know that I'm going to pick it up. And so I jumped into EA Access to do the trial to see, like, do I really want to spend the money on this? And ultimately, I ended up with yeah, because outside of this little choppy animation thing and a horrible color scheme on their map UI, those are 2 things out of a very long list of a lot of things that they got right that are really enjoyable for me. I'm going to finish my story with Ryder to the end. Like, I haven't even woken up my brother yet, so, like, I'm just skirting the tip of the iceberg with this game, and I'm, like, 7.5 hours in already.
Dang.
And I'm, like, the last time I looked, 12% story completed. So
12%. Yep. 7 hours equals 12%. Because
I 100% viability'd EOS. I 70% viability percented the second planet that I went to, something, which has a bunch of Angara on it. Then I went back to the Nexus to pick up a couple of missions, including the murder mystery one, which I had to go back to EOS to find the evidence for and track that down after shooting a bunch of desert slugs.
Did the slug butler do it?
No.
Oh.
It was the Ket, but the Turian wanted to do it. The Ket just beat him to it. So, spoiler alert. But you'll find that out yourself anyway if you do that mission. Because it's a side mission. And so I ran some strike team stuff, both automated strike team stuff. I did some multiplayer stuff. So, like, again, because it's so deep, yeah, I'm 7.5 hours in, and I've completed 12% of the story.
Man, okay, so sounds like you're in for a long, enjoyable.
I'm in for a long ride. For the long haul, but it's going to be a fun ride, at least for me. So
sounds good.
I'm going to say again, watch some people's gameplay footage of the game. If you have EA access, do the trial first and give it a shot to make sure that it's your type of game. But if you enjoy open world adventure games and exploring with a whole lot of RPG on the back end, then you really need to give Andromeda a shot. Because I'm enjoying it. And I will finish it probably before I start Wildlands. Because that's a whole lot of open world to deal with.
We're going to open up, girl. Going to open up like a...
Because Wildlands also open world. That's a lot of time. But that's what I've got.
All right.
I'm giving Andromeda a thumbs up.
All right. I might have to go watch some playthroughs and maybe see about doing the trial. As of right now, like, playing games for me has been a little not happening. Not by a little, and by a little I mean, like, yeah, I haven't really played a game for, like, this whole month. Outside of the few games I played with you at PAX East. Right. I think that's the most gaming that I've done all month.
PAX East! I'm
seriously looking forward to this month officially ending, and then I can kind of go back to, you know, gaming and life. Watching anime and... Yeah, like...
Because there's a bunch of anime that you need to watch.
Oh, yes, I know.
There's, like, a Fate movie.
I know.
You watch The Megasus Bride.
My queue has been getting bigger, and I'm like,
watch
I just...
Kobayashi's thing.
Like, I couldn't afford to with all the shit I...
There's a Seven Deadly Sins movie.
Yep, I saw that.
Obviously. We have to watch The Last
Naruto. Since we're talking about...
Yes.
Let me divert us a little bit because okay. I feel like I deserve to like
you deserve it. Talk go ahead for a little bit. You can bit. Talk now. I'm done talking. Okay. I'm just going to interject.
So earlier this week I did see some news about, you know, Netflix releasing the trailer for the Death Note live action.
Oh, snap diddles. I've totally forgot about this.
So I was like, oh, I will take time out from making individual place cards to watch a trailer. It's only like 2 minutes of my life, which then ended up in a giant rage. I was in a giant rage at my job, like eating lunch at my desk, and I was like, no
fucking
way. I'm
really surprised that you didn't like go off on social. I kind of expected
you to. Man, because I'm sitting there.
Then I
there.
Thought I just missed it.
No, because I was just like, because I watched it and it felt shitty, like very shitty.
Set it up because not everybody has watched the anime.
So if you haven't watched it yet, you know, yes, Netflix is doing an original, which I'm using air quotes here because,
it's an original series based off of the anime.
Of Death Note.
Yeah.
Yes, the anime. Now, granted, if you've watched Crunchyroll, then you've already seen a very good live action of Death Note. Like, it is amazing. Watch the one on Crunchyroll. I'm telling you guys now that I do not have any faith.
Well, what's Death Note about first?
So Death Note...
Because you gotta talk about it, and you have to talk about how it looked before you can talk about why you raged about the Netflix trailer.
So,
gotta give people context.
So Death Note is an anime about a son, Yagami Light. His father is a cop, and he's, like, a pretty good student. But he's a little disinjected. He's kind of, you know, jaded about the world. He thinks he'll just become a cop because his dad's a cop. You know, but, like, he's really not motivated to do much besides live and go to school and whatever.
He's apathetic to the extreme.
To stuff. Like, he just does not care. Like, he's moving in life. Yeah, okay, that's great. But, like, he's not striving to do anything. Like, he is bored. Like, everything is in a weird monotone sepia color to him. Like, he is just not engaged. He is checked out. In this universe, death gods or Shinigami are real. One of them, by the name of Rook, drops his Death Note, which is a journal. And within the journal, there are rules about how the journal can be used. Usually these do not get into the hands of humans unless Shinigami get bored and they want to, like, cause some havoc, which is kind of what Rook decides he wants to do because he's also kind of bored with, you know, the world. So he drops his book to see if any human would pick it up and then, like, if this would be entertaining to him. So these two kind of cross paths.
And what does the Death Note actually do?
It kills people. When you write their name, and you have to know their full name, like, you can't just be like, my cousin Bob. Like that doesn't work. It's got to be a full name. But if you put this person's name into the Death Note, and just straight up their name like nothing else within, I think it's like 4 or 5 minutes of putting their name in there, unless you specify otherwise, the person will die of a heart attack. Like, that's it. Like, health reasons will just take them out. However, if you are more detailed in that, you could actually do a lot more with this book, because it's the notebook of a death god. Like, clearly you have all powers within death and all that. Light at first doesn't really believe that it has this ability, and he sees the news one night and he sees these robbers or criminals that got arrested, and he was like, he just wrote one of their names down because he didn't believe that this book would actually do it, and then in fact did. And then he kind of develops this complex where he thinks he can become the god of this world because he can exact judgment on these people that the law system just can't seem to do. He is the best Byronic villain hero. Like, I don't exactly know what you'd want to call him, because, I mean, you definitely sympathize with what he is aiming to do. But then you do kind of see him fall into his own madness and then kind of become the villain of the, but you sympathize with him.
Right, because it starts out from a point of, like, he is just trying to punish these people who
people who have done things.
Right, and it seems like they're getting away with it because the law is not able to punish them. So he can without these consequences, and that's how he starts.
But then the law is like, because absolute power
corrupts absolutely.
And it does, and it's the slowest burn, which I think is what makes it so unique. Like, the road to hell is paved in good intentions, and here he had the best, purest intention that just kind of morphed into this dark thing. And it's really beautiful to kind of see that decay happen. And he had a great foil in L, who is like this detective, this genius detective, who is kind of like a hickamori and a shut-in and doesn't really engage with people, but always has the right answer. We all have an L in our lives that we can't stand. Like, there's a person who just gets things on a level like 5 steps ahead of you no matter what you do. We all got one.
Yeah.
But they're a great foil for each other in the series. You know, and the live action on Crunchyroll did a great job of showing that their foil and how they worked with each other and also against each other, because they actually do end up working literally right on top of each other, because the whole time L knows that Light is involved. He just wants to get it completely right. And I mean, he plays a very dangerous game, which, if you haven't seen the series by now, well then, what the fuck? And then two, I'm going to spoil it. He does end up sacrificing himself to prove the point, you know, to prove the fact that he was right. And he is right at the end. Though the live action does take it to a slighter left than the series does. But anyway, great anime series. If you haven't watched it, go ahead and do. It is still timeless and classic now. So Netflix is doing their original series based off of this. And one, there's a strong hand of whitewashing, which, okay, we see this happening in media and in Hollywood and all that stuff. And no one's terribly happy about it. Yeah, Light is a very, very, very white guy. I think they're going to Americanize his name, too, which is kind of weird, but okay, whatever. But the little nugget of interest that I'm getting from this series, because I'm going to give it a shot, and here's why. Because the guy who is playing L, the master detective, is a black man. And the internet is pissed about it.
They're so pissed!
They are so mad that L is a black man.
They're more pissed at that than the whitewashing, which, here's the thing.
Right.
Again, and this is where I have, like, a differencing of opinions from most people, is I looked at the casting for the Netflix thing, and I really, very much like the Ghost in the Shell thing, I didn't really feel like it was whitewashed, because when you go back and you look at the animated series, the characters that are in the series are not overtly Japanese, Chinese, or Asian, you know, with the exception of,
but that's
like,
also, but that's also the of the time period of animation, for like anime animation of that time isn't as open as it is now. Like, and even now, like in certain animes, like, unless, you know, they have like a straight up Japanese name, which, I mean, in Ghost in the Shell, she does. If you just saw it and just saw it, you know,
right, but the whole thing with Ghost in the Shell is that people are putting their consciousness into different bodies. I interpret that as being I don't have to necessarily put my Asian
I don't identify with gender or race because I'm just an entity.
And so, I don't see Ghost in the Shell as whitewashing because the whole concept of what is happening completely negates the whole gender and race thing.
Right.
You know,
you're right.
Whereas with
you're absolutely right, but no one's thinking on that level. They're all like,
"I am." Come on, people, I know you get are. On my level.
It's like, but like, this is an anime. They're Japanese. Should have been. And don't get me wrong, I would have definitely appreciated.
I would have loved it. I would have appreciated it. But it's not driven by the medium that has to be. Okay. So, when you tell a slave story of African slaves, kind of needs to be black people. Okay, right. But when you're telling the story of a consciousness swapping bodies, there's no defined.
It has to be.
Right.
Right.
And the same thing when you look at the source material on, at least for me, when you look at the source material on Death Note, the characters, because again, Netflix is basing this off of the anime, not the manga, not anything else. When you abstractly look at the anime characters, the lineup, there's nothing, to your point, overtly Asian about them. So I'm not up in arms about the character, the lead character, Light, being a white dude. He still needs to be named Light.
Light becomes our antagonist.
Right.
L is our sacrificial lamb.
Right. But like the main story, okay. Usually all it was told from Light's perspective of not getting caught with the book and outmaneuvering L, because that's really where he became the villain. He became Moriarty-like. He got to the point where he just wanted to outmaneuver L.
Okay? Like, he was just getting the biggest boner over surviving another day against L's luck.
But Light...
Like, and it's a tease. It's an edge. It's, like, the biggest cock tease.
But I love that they're like, look, this is the story we want to tell. So, again, in the whole era of inclusivity, okay, where we have these characters who are not overtly any race, because the story itself is not overtly any area. You can take that story and pick it up, and it can be set in Japan. Right.
And granted, and even in the original anime series, when the other Shinigami, Rin, I think, gets introduced, like, Rin is like, you know, not everything has to happen in Tokyo. Like,
right.
I think Rin is technically, I think, identifies female, or at least has, like, the air of a female.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, people have dropped books other places. So, like, these could just be one-offs that are happening in other places. They don't all have to happen in... Like, I feel bad for Tokyo, because Tokyo gets a bad rap. Like, shit just happens in Tokyo.
Be popping all the off time. All the time.
So, like, I would love, like, if they were going to do this and, like, really kind of pull themselves out of... I know that they're basing it off the manga, but I would have no problem with them, you know, having this is the occurrence that happened in America. This is what happened in... Like, because clearly there's more than two Shinigami. There are more than one Death Note.
Exactly.
I think at one point in the live action, there are, like, three roaming around. So they kind of hinted at even a third Shinigami who they never really... I know they probably mentioned more in the manga, which I didn't read. But there's a lot more going on in the universe. So they're just expanding it now. So, like, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I mean, I don't have a problem with that with Future Diary, which Future Diary is also my ish. If you've never watched that series, go ahead and do that. On Crunchyroll, there was a live action of Future Diary, and they actually really took the basis of it and pushed it out to a totally different set of people, and none of the abilities were the same. Like, but it still had the same premise of, you know, the death game that happens in the original Future Diary, and clearly that there's, you know. Yuno still does exist in the universe, and clearly there are multiple versions of her. Spoilers if you've never seen that series, but I'm not really spoiling anything for you by saying that because there's just too much going on. And I found that version of Future Diary, I think it's called Another Diary, like, I found it very refreshing, but it still paid enough homage to the original for me not to get mad about them twerking with the... tweaking the source material.
They weren't twerking, so, with, like, it. They were tweaking it.
They were twerking it and tweaking it and
dropping it like it was hot.
There was enough respect for the source material that they could vary on it and still make it feel like it could have existed in the canon, which I like. I'm going to give Netflix, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt because I want to see what they're going to do with this. Like, I kind of hope it's not, like, the most cliched things that they could throw into a series because, you know, Netflix has been really good with the original series lately. Like, their Marvel stuff with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, and now with Kimmy Schmidt. Like, they're on a roll.
I was going to say, Mom, if you're staying... Look, look, I'm pissed about people not giving Iron Fist a shot. Like, trolls have shamed the dude who plays Danny so hard that he had to leave Twitter. No.
All right, now that's stupid. That's stupid. That didn't need to happen. I mean, I'm going to watch it. Like, I'm going to watch it.
Yep.
You know, and however and I walk away with it, it's how I walk.
Most of the people that are complaining about Iron Fist never read any of the books.
Well, that's really funny. Yeah, because I think I saw some of my friends, like, if anyone read it, you know, he is white, you know. Like, he's a white guy. Can we get over this now? So, like, clearly, if you don't know the canon, if you're not versed in it, then I'm not saying you can't have an opinion, but don't be mad when someone slaps.
It's just, if, like, you didn't read any of the books, you're like, oh, it's a thing called Iron Fist. Obviously, I should be looking at an Asian dude. And then you get upset when you're not looking at an Asian dude. And it's like, did you fucking read the books?
I mean, you know, guys, when they make a live action of Afro Samurai, I'll be really pissed when they put Kevin James as Afro Samurai. Like, I will be very mad that it is not a black guy.
I'll be really upset the first time he drops an N-bomb, because Afro Samurai constantly be saying that.
Oh, man.
But so anyway, that's why I'm going to be mad when Kevin James is Afro Samurai.
He won't be.
He knows
better.
He's not taking that job.
But anyway, so I mean, that I'm going to give it its shot, because I do think it deserves a clear blank slate. How do I feel walking away from it?
Yep.
Like, and I do this for all animes. Like, I give most animes 4 episodes. If you don't get me in 4, okay, nice try.
I give
them
3.
But I'm not like, I fucking hate you, and I hate your mom, and I hate the ground that you... Like, there's no point to that. You're exuding all this energy for nothing. But everyone just got so mad. And I was just like, I kind of want to see what Like, I'm not a troll, but, like, I'm, like, in the bushes watching the trolls. Like, entertain me, trolls. Entertain me.
Trolls. And don't fucking watch the trolls for entertainment, because that's how you feed the fucking trolls.
That's why I'm hiding in the bushes.
No, you're feeding them by giving them attention, because you're watching them eating popcorn and being like, oh, this gonna be good. No, don't do that shit. Good. Don't do that shit.
I was gonna talk about Vampire, but...
But we don't have time to do that.
So I'm gonna have to talk about it, not next week, I think next week.
Or you can hit me, I don't know, do a write-up about it on the site between now and then.
That too.
You have the ability.
I do write words a lot.
You can.
So I can do that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think next week's show is a very... Here I was worried that I wouldn't get to talk a lot. But isn't, like, next week's episode, like, all about me?
Pretty much.
Like,
yeah. Yep.
So, like, it's a good give or take.
All about you.
All about me.
Yeah.
And my big mouth and the things that I say.
Yeah. So as Panda has alluded to, we are going to be off next weekend because she's getting married. But we're still going to hit you with a new podcast episode that is all about her talking about getting married.
And
what has to happen when she wants to get married.
My fantasy man made real. Whether or not I'm actually marrying that. I mean,
well, that remains to be seen. But
this is 10 years of speculation here, guys. So, like, if I hit this on the nose, well, then I deserve bragging rights for, like, the rest of my natural life.
It's okay. you had a lot of really high qualifications.
I had a lot of expectations.
But you'll get to hear it next week on our podcast. So make sure if you haven't,
I'm so glad my fiance doesn't listen to the show.
He's gonna listen to this one because I'm going to directly send it to him.
No.
Yes.
You know. Did you send it at... Well, we'll already be married by the time you send it. So.
By the time you listen to this, you will have already been married.
Too late. We'll be legally bound. It will.
That you bookmark our site, www.electricsisterhood.com. That way you can check out all the stuff that we're writing as well as the team is reviewing on the site. Get our podcast. We make it easy to subscribe. We've got links right on the homepage for you so you can grab our podcast. You can get it in iTunes, either on the desktop or through your iOS device by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. You can also get our podcast on Stitcher Radio, VogNetwork.com, and pretty much any place on the web where fine episodes of podcasts are available. You can also check out our news and reviews in Apple News if you use that application on your iOS devices, where we'll keep out great reviews, both gaming and anime as well. So make sure that you add us to your favorites in Apple News and get our new articles when they come out every single day. if you enjoy our show and you enjoy the stuff that's on our site, then please make sure to bookmark and check out all of the great sites and shows from all of our network partners. That starts with King Baby Duck over at b3crew.com. He is actually hosting a panel with the guys from Wicked Anime and 42 Believer, and I forget who else, but if you're going to be at Anime Boston next weekend, definitely make sure to participate in the game show Who Cringed Last. You can find him in the guidebook. There will be prizes. It is going to be priceless. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait. So
I wish we were... Well, I mean, I'm going to be getting married at that time, so I will not...
We have a function, but otherwise we would be there.
We would be there, because I would totally love to see what the gang and KBD have up their sleeves for these very unfortunate participants.
Poor unfortunate souls. They really don't actually know what they're about
to
be...
They have no idea.
..subjected to.
Hope they're wearing clean underpants, because they won't be by the time they're done.
Nope. So definitely, if you're going to the show, make sure that you check out and participate in the game show Who Cringed Last, that you visit b3crew.com, that you follow Evan and his entire team on social, because I'm sure that they're going to be sharing video and photos from the show as well as from their game show. So make sure that you check them out. Also, check out our homie Hamsterman 2049 every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, streaming all kinds of interesting games, retro and new, on our Facebook page, facebook.com/nativesh. You can find the post there. You can also see it directly if you go to twitch.tv/henchman2049. Like I said, 9 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday, streaming old and new games. They are hilarious. Be part of chat. Be part of the stream live. And hopefully discover something new. Also, on the video side of the world, our man Phil the Issues Guy with Phil's Recap and Review on YouTube. Fantastic, fantastic review shows. Oh my gosh, I love his recaps. You'll love his recaps as well. And you can be part of them live. Join him in chat, call in, be part of the recaps. I'm just about finished up on his Viking ones, and I gotta tell you, really fantastic stuff. So make sure that you check them all out. And his archive is phenomenal. The Sopranos review recaps are hilariousness. And last but certainly not least, our homies at NerdCrave.com, holding it down with all the things that nerds crave, whether it's anime or comic books or video games. If it's nerdy, they are talking about it at NerdCrave.com. So make sure that you check them out. As always, it's been a pleasure. I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And until next time,
stay classy.
Titties.
Titties. Oh, fuck. It just, it's too good. It's too good. You can't not end on titties.
You can't not end on titties. It just makes you smile. You can't say titties and not be smiling. Try to say titties with a mean face.
I can't.
You can't. Just you can't say titties.
Because your mouth is already kind of in like a
smile. It's already in a smiling face when you're saying titties. So you can't not smile when you say titties.
Titties. Nope, I can't. Especially me, I can't.
Nope.